The Conversation Station, WNBC, AM and FM, New York.
This is NBC News, Gemini Recovery Force on the move.
NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by Rambler, now offering important savings at your Rambler dealer's swap and go sale. Now, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, here's Russ Ward. Listen again on the Hour for Monitor News, brought to you by the Retail Clerks International Association. Join B. Wayne and Andre Baruch weekday mornings on The Conversation Station, WNBC, AM and FM, New York. Brad Crandall back with your summertime monitor. If your signature is on a document, but you yourself didn't write it, is it a legal signature? The answer is yes, it can be legal. More on signatures with a twist you won't want to miss coming up shortly. In fact, right after Bert Kempfert and That Happy Feeling. There's no question but that technology is affecting the lives of all of us in countless ways. In presidential campaigns, few will question the importance of radio and television, for example, as tools for helping us judge the candidates' personalities and character. A new book deals with another technological tool. Its author, Charles Hamilton, believes it, too, played a key role in a presidential election, the election of 1960 that sent the late John F. Kennedy to the White House. The tool is a robot pen that signed thousands of John F. Kennedy signatures to personal letters. NBC's Bill Ryan talks with the author about his book.
Mr. Hamilton, this book is called The Robot That Helped to Make a President. What are you speaking of when you speak of a robot?
The robot in this case is a machine which mechanically signs a man's signature, duplicating it so perfectly that it would be considered authentic in any court of law.
It is legal, then?
It is a legal signature. The master signature, of course, would be signed by President Kennedy, and then the machine would duplicate that signature any number of times,
mm-hmm.
and it can sign as many as 3,000 signatures in a day.
How do you feel that perhaps this machine helped to elect him president?
Well, the goodwill letters that Senator Kennedy got out while he was campaigning for the presidency certainly number well into the thousands. I would say perhaps 100,000 mm-hmm. from the numbers that have been brought to me, and all of them were signed by a robot.
They were all robot machine signed.
Yes.
How can you tell?
Well, I have identified seven different robot patterns,
mm-hmm.
which were used by Kennedy. And in each case, examples of an identical pattern will superimpose so that you can see that they were signed almost as though by a rubber stamp, mm-hmm. except that in the case of the robot, you can fit your own fountain pen into the machine.
Well, is there any indication that at any time the machine was used without his permission?
No, I don't think that it was, but that potential always remains. When you have a machine that can sign the president's name, you have a powerful weapon, because if you use that machine without the president's permission, or in the event of his death, if you withhold the news and continue to sign important mandates with mm-hmm. the machine, you can see for yourself that it could be a very devastating and powerful device.
Do I understand, Mr. Hamilton, in one portion of the book that it appears or that you claim that some letters were sent out after Mr. Kennedy's death with indications that he had signed them before his death? And
yes,
the machine
those
had
are,
done
it? No, those were not done by machine. Those were done by secretary. Kennedy had, during his career, at least 14 different secretaries who signed his name for him, the letters. Mm-hmm. And he used at least three different secretaries while he was president to sign various papers for him.
Has this been confirmed, or is this just what you have found in your research?
Well,
have they admitted it?
No, they have not admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Salinger vehemently denied that there was such a machine, but later on he did admit it,
mm-hmm.
but said that it wasn't being used anymore.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the case of the secretaries who were signing President Kennedy's name, there is one secretary who apparently is still signing his name, even a year after his death, more than a year after his death.
To what?
To souvenir items. For example, in my book, there's illustrated a first day cover of some kind, which a young German had mm-hmm. sent to President Kennedy. And it was sent with a covering letter of Mrs. Lincoln to him a year after Kennedy's death, saying that she found it among his papers. But oddly, I found a number of such cases, and it seems that Kennedy must have signed an awful lot of things just before his death. And they're now just turning up.
Let's get back to the machine signature for a while now. You say that's legal. That's not a fake. Is its economic value thereby debased because it's machine rather than actually done by the man?
You mean its value as an autograph?
Yes.
Yes. At a recent auction, I sold a very important letter of Kennedy, which was signed by machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought about $95 because of its tremendous importance, in which he discussed the cabinet that he would probably select
mm-hmm.
if he were elected president.
What would it have brought had it been?
I would say it would have brought close to $1,000.
Well, that's 10 to 1, roughly. Yeah.
Yes, that's just about the ratio.
Charles Hamilton, author of the book, The Robot That Helped to Make a President, a voluminous study, though it's a slim book, of the handwriting of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. This is Bill Ryan reporting for Monitor.
A very interesting subject. You can't help wondering what Washington or Jefferson or Adams or the rest would think if they could see a White House press conference today or watch a robot sign. And how about John Hancock? Here's Barry Como in a party mood.
I've got a lot of memories to last me the rest of my life. So if you don't want to love me, baby, that'll be all right. I'm gonna take all the loving that I have for you. Gonna take all the loneliness, sit right down with the blues. I'm gonna give myself a party and serve old memories. Give myself a party, think of how it used to be. Remember all give myself a party, just me and the blues.
Gemini flight in 1 minute on the monitor beacon.
The sound you hear in the background comes from a giant farm in the Midwest. It's a combine cutting down a rich harvest of the finest barley man can grow. Anheuser-Busch pays a premium price for this barley. We use it for Michelob beer. As a matter of fact, the man from Michelob actually visits this area throughout the growing season just to make sure the barley is good enough for Michelob.
Excellence. Only American excellence could produce Michelob, the great American beer. Brewed with the finest barley and the most fragrant imported hops that money can buy, Michelob is also created with far more care. A great draft beer since 1896, Michelob is now sold in distinctive bottles, too. Now you can enjoy it at home, as well as in the finest restaurants. Michelob, the great American beer from the great American brewer, Anheuser-Busch.
Start your day with Big Wilson on The Conversation Station, WNBC, AM and FM, New York.
Brad Crandall here with Monitor 65, and now a Gemini progress report.
This is Russ Ward at the Manned Spacecraft Center. Gemini astronauts Cooper and Conrad were informed about 20 minutes ago that their flight would go 120 complete revolutions instead of 121. The decision was made late this afternoon because of troublesome weather building up around Tropical Storm Betsy. The new recovery location is some 400 miles further north away from the storm. General Leighton I. Davis, Defense Department Chief of Recovery Forces, was asked about the problems involved in switching landing sites.
Well, it's just another redeployment. The carrier has moved its position some 18 or 20 times in the last 7 days in order to cover almost 30 different aim points. Now, the choice between 121.1 and 122.1 was one that was deferred till this afternoon. Actually, we stopped the carrier as it steamed towards 122 and asked it to wait there a while until all the factors could be weighed. Now we've started it back towards 122.1, which was slid a little bit to the east as well. And it has about 260 miles to steam and be there in a little while.
General Leighton Davis, Gemini 5 now in its 113th revolution. This is Russ Ward, NBC News at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
NBC radio and television coverage of Gemini splashdown will start at 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time Sunday in view of the earlier end now scheduled for the flight.
Just let a girl appear. The way it's been since the world began.
Mancini with orchestra and chorus and man's favorite sport. Now, speaking of sports, let's turn to an outdoor diversion on monitor sports, shall we? The workhorse of the New York Pro Football Giants will be watching the games from the stands this year. Veteran running back Alex Webster, now retired, will be operating as a local sportscaster. For more of Webster's plans and new point of view, here's his chat with monitor sports editor Len Dillon.
Alex Webster, now that you've retired as a pro football player, what are you doing?
Well, Len, I'm actually in the graphic arts business, selling paper to printers and big business, and I'm also in the advertising field.
Any regrets about calling it a playing career?
No, Len. Actually, football has been very good to me, and I think playing 12 years of professional football, I've been very lucky to get out in the shape that I'm in.
Alec, your back bothered you the last couple of years, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I had a disc problem in the lower part of my back, and actually was what they call a pinched sciatic nerve, and it affected my right side and my right leg. It started to bother me to the point that I really didn't enjoy playing football. I mean, my personality changed. I became grouchy. I was in constant pain completely, and I always said that the day that I didn't like, you know, actually didn't enjoy playing football, that I would get out of it. And this year, it actually had to be the toughest year I've ever spent in my life.
Red, what about the giant quarterback situation?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, Gary Wood is a real good football player. And they have a fellow named Henry Schistel, who more or less was the third team quarterback last year, and he spent most of the time on the bench. I think that they have a big pair of shoes to fill in Y.A. Tittle. And I believe that with a little experience in some of these preseason games, and once they get the tension off them, I think they're going to go a long way. Because basically, the Giants do have a great football team. I think they got five of the finest running backs in the National Football League. And once again, it's all hinges on the quarterback. But I think once all this tension comes off them, they're going to start moving again.
What about long-range plans? You're in the paper business and the advertising business, but and also the broadcasting business, but what about coaching?
Well, I was offered a couple coaching jobs with actually in the National Football League this year. Actually, it was the Detroit Lions,
mm-hmm.
and it was Harry Gilmer had offered me the offensive coaching job. And my children are getting big. I have a boy, 11, and a girl, 9. And I just couldn't see taking them into the coaching field. If you don't produce a lot of times, you're fired. And I just can't see bouncing from, you know, city to city or town to town.
What about the AFL, Alec? Comet?
Well, the AFL is actually here to stay, which we all know this, and I think they have a lot of fine ball players. They have a lot of great coaches. I have met some of their owners and talked to some of their owners, and they're just wonderful people and great business people. I would have to say in the next year or two, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is, that eventually that the NFL and the AFL will come together. The public wants it, and I think eventually we're going to see like an American League, a National League in baseball, the same thing in football.
Alec, with all due respect to the public, the owners are businessmen. It's costing them money. They'll get together.
Well, you got to give them credit if they have it. I wish they'd send a little my way, and I know you could use some too, Len.
Alec Webster, thank you ever so much and good luck.
Thank you very much, Len.
Glenn Dillon for Monitor Sports.
By the way, we note that Mr. Khrushchev is writing his memoirs. Experts on Soviet affairs have expressed some doubt, however, that the ousted premier's recollections of life as Russia's number one man will be published very soon. Personally, I would tend to think those doubts are well-founded, especially if they're talking about publication in Russia. And for that matter, if the book is ever published, Russian readers will probably be asking, who was that? This is Monitor Spanning the Continent on NBC Radio. Natchez, Mississippi is tuned in on WMIS. Naturally. Brad Crandall here, right back.
Radio and television coverage of Gemini Splashdown now scheduled for 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow, 1 hour earlier than previously scheduled. Follow it on NBC. This Sunday's Journal American brings you revealing close-ups of the major Democratic candidates for the mayoralty nomination in New York. See intimate photos of the contenders, with background information to help you to decide which candidate is right for you. And there will be an eye-opening story of what life is like today behind the Iron Curtain, told by a newsman who has just returned from the communist-controlled countries of Europe. This series spells out the important changes taking place now in the satellite nations and how they seem to be developing greater independence and interest in the free world. And of course, Sunday's Journal American, the newspaper of the astronauts, we'll bring you the latest exclusive pictures of the Gemini 5 space thrust and the personal statements of the now-famed spacemen and their families. Remember, you get the lively, colorful TV magazine at no extra cost. Only with Sunday's Journal American. Metropolitan New York News with Fred Facey, next on The Conversation Station, WNBC, AM and FM, New York.
At 9:31, it's 68 degrees in New York, and this is Fred Facey with the latest news. The top stories. Storms cause heavy damage on Long Island. Gemini 5 mission is shortened by one orbit. And Hudson River excursion boat goes around. And now the news. Thunderstorms are causing severe damage in several Long Island communities. At least 15 persons have been injured by falling trees in Freeport, and heavy damage has been reported in Baldwin, Merrick, Wantagh, and Roosevelt. Freeport Police Chief Edward Dixon says falling trees have blocked roads and cut power lines throughout Nassau County. Dixon says 100 firemen are standing by in Freeport, and 10 emergency electric crews are working to restore power lines. Hailstones as large as 3/4 inch have been reported, and wind velocity hit close to 70 miles an hour. A tropical storm named Betsy has caused space officials to cut the flight of Gemini 5 by one orbit. The splashdown of the record-breaking spaceship
has been changed to 8:55 a.m. tomorrow. The place will be 600 miles east of Jacksonville, Florida, to avoid the storm area. Astronauts Gordon Cooper and Pete Conrad are tired but in good health as their almost eight-day space voyage nears its end. Doctors are considering a prescription of PEP pills for the reentry tomorrow into the Earth's atmosphere. NBC News will continue special progress reports on Gemini 5 on Channel 4 television and WNBC Radio 660. Both will cover the Gemini splashdown and recovery tomorrow, starting at 7 a.m. Television coverage will be in color. Some 1,300 passengers on a Hudson River sightseeing boat got a more exciting trip today than they had bargained for. The Alexander Hamilton lost one of its side paddles and ran aground in the Hudson just off 246th Street in the Bronx. Police boats and helicopters directed two Moran Company tugboats to the scene. The tugs had the 300-foot boat afloat within minutes and towed it to its berth at the 41st Street Pier. President Johnson has announced what is described as a foster grandparents program. The aim is to employ needy elderly persons as substitute parents for children in institutions. Some also will be assigned to help bedridden and isolated elderly persons. The pay is generally expected to be federal minimum wage of $1.25 an hour. Now the weather picture. The present temperature is 68 degrees and it's fair. The humidity 66%. The barometer is rising, the THI 66. Winds from the northwest at 14 miles per hour. Tonight will be clear, cool, and windy. Tonight's low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny, cool, and clear. Now repeating the present temperature, it's 68 degrees. That's the news and weather to this moment. Next NBC News on the hour at 10 o'clock with Charles Murphy. This is Fred Facey.
Hi, NBC's Monitor 65. Brad Crandall here. The closest you and I might come to the thrills of a space flight is falling through space, skydiving. Perhaps we can help you decide whether skydiving is for you. I've already made up my mind. We'll have information on the subject a little later. And also, more from Gemini 5. Here and now, the Johnny Man Singer.
When I was just a lad of 10, my father said to me, come here and take a lesson from the lovely lemon tree. Don't put your faith in love, my boy, my father said to me. I fear you'll find that love is like the lovely lemon tree. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Beneath that lemon tree one day my love and I did lie. A girl so sweet that when she smiled the stars rose in the sky. We passed the summer lost in love beneath the lemon tree. The music of her laughter hid my father's words from me. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. One day she left without a word, she took away the sun. In the dark she left behind, I knew what she had done. She left me for another man, a common tale but true. A sadder man, but why and now I sing these words to you. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible to eat. Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet. But the fruit of the poor lemon is impossible.
astronauts Cooper and Conrad land tomorrow, the final few hundred feet of their fall will be handled by parachute. Interestingly enough, the sale of parachutes is booming. Not for returning astronauts, of course, but for the increasing number of fans who've taken up the sport of skydiving. Lowell Bachman of Chicago is one of just three merchants in the U.S. who handle parachutes on a retail and a wholesale basis. Monitor reporter Johnny Earp went to the parachute store where he found the 30-year-old proprietor carefully packing the chutes.
Lowell, I know as the next paratrooper, the skydiving shouldn't come very hard for you, but what about those pupils you've got? How many do you have in your school now?
Well, I would say that we train approximately 400 to 500 per year.
How many do you keep in a class, not one time a day, or do you try to regulate the class?
We like to keep the class down to 6 to 8 people to give them more individual-type training.
Well, for example, now I'm a student in your class. Just what and how would I operate once you got me in a plane?
Well, we would outfit you, first of all, with a good parachute, good boots, helmet, everything that we can to keep you safe. When you're a student, we also equip you with a radio that we're able to talk with you. Once you jump out of the aircraft, we give you a radio that's plugged into your ear, and you can actually listen to the ground control man tell you how to maneuver your parachute and get down to the ground safely.
How many times do you take me in the air before I'm qualified to take a jump?
Well, we like to give the people, and according to the Parachute Club of America rules and regulations that have been set forth, we like to give them 5 static line jumps. And that is where the parachute is opened automatically. And then after that, you go on the parachute jumps where you yourself pull the ripcord.
What do you charge for a lesson for learning to jump?
Basically, your first jump, wherever in the country you might be taking it, the general price runs for your first jump, all your training, the jump master, rental on equipment, runs approximately $35.
And what you said, I noticed earlier in this interview, that something about that I had the proper equipment. How much does all this proper equipment cost?
Well,
roughly?
You can completely outfit yourself for, I would say, no more than $150 with good, safe, reliable equipment.
Do they have many people that are participating in this so-called sport?
Yes, I would say there's 70 to 100,000 people in the United States that participate in this type of sport.
Lowell, as a pro, where do you consider the person in the most danger? At what time of that jump are they in the most danger?
Well, for a student jumper who's just leaving the aircraft, I would say in the first few seconds after leaving the aircraft. Body position is a very critical thing. Once you've progressed and become a more expert-type jumper, I would say that the critical part comes when you're coming toward the ground. And the reason for this is as you increase in your ability to direct the parachute, you usually change your ideas from a fun jumper into a competition-type jumper, and you're hitting the ground at a fairly good velocity, aiming at a target, and you're working very hard. You almost get fixation on the target, and you seem to throw the cares of your broken bones out the window, and you drive for a target.
What is the oldest known person that you know of that are taking jumps or have taken them?
Well, I know of one individual that's 64 years old who jumps, and I have heard of people 80 and 90 that have made parachute jumps.
80 and 90 and didn't have to jump?
Didn't have to jump, no, just to celebrate a birthday or an anniversary of some type.
That person's fixing to have no more birthdays. They're taking an awful chance, aren't they, 80 and 90?
Well, I would say the older you get, the more brittle your bones get and the more susceptible you would be to possibly breaking a leg. But with good equipment, you have no worries in that respect.
Now, I understand you once, during your numerous jumps, once landed in a nudist camp. Is that correct?
Yes, we've landed in nudist camps on numerous occasions. Mm-hmm.
That sounded like maybe this was planned or deliberate, you say, on numerous occasions.
Well, it was planned, yes.
Well, where, for example, did which nudist camp?
Well, we landed in the Running Bears nudist colony in Lyons, Wisconsin.
What happened? What time of day was this when you landed?
Oh, it was approximately noontime when the activity was at a high peak.
What kind of reception did you get?
Quite a warm reception. They knew we were coming, and it was quite interesting for
Who was most embarrassed, you or the people in our nudist camp?
Well, the people in the nudist camp weren't embarrassed, and I wasn't embarrassed, as I could say. It was interesting.
They tell me they served you lunch or tea or something, and then you went on out with it.
We sat down and had coffee with them, a little cake.
Thank you, skydiver Lowell Bachman, for coming by Monitor and telling us something about those jumps. And believe me, that's one sport I don't want any part of. It looks nice just from the air. Thank you, Lowell.
Thank you, Johnny.
Now, this is Johnny Oak in Chicago for Monitor.
Well, folks, have fun jumping. But in the paraphrased words of Alexander Wolcott, I must remember to write self a note. Remind self never to jump out of plane, with or without parachute. Music now. Young Nancy Wilson with her latest, Where Does That Leave Me?
In your eyes, where the glow of your love used to shine. In your eyes, where my love leg used to be. From all the world to your arms, where my secret shelter was. And your face is hiding where my hiding place once used to be.
News of Gemini 5 shortly, so stay tuned to the Monitor Beacon.
Hi, this is Lee Leonard, and I'll be seeing you weekday afternoons from 2 until 5 here on WNBC Radio to talk about things in general or perhaps something in particular. Some days we'll have a topic. Some days I'll let you choose the topic and we'll take pot luck. The telephone number, Plaza 7, 8866, and you'll call the shots. And call me, too, I hope, on the telephone.
PDQ is a terrific new game. I'm Dennis James, and I'll be your host on this new show that features celebrity players weekdays at 1.
Comedian Jan Murray, Polly Bergen, and John Gavin will appear in the premiere week of NBC's new television game show when PDQ and host Dennis James take to the air in color this Monday through Friday from 1 to 1:30 p.m. on Channel 4. Talk sports with Bill Mazur afternoons on The Conversation Station, WNBC, AM and FM, New York.
And now a Gemini progress report.
This is Russ Ward at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. Gemini 5 has just started its 114th revolution of the Earth. The astronauts, now located over South America, soon to be crossing the Atlantic and up over North Africa. Tropical storm Betsy has caused the mission to be cut short by one revolution. The landing now will take place at 8:55 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow morning, about 276 miles southwest of Bermuda and well out of reach of the storm. Al Chop, the voice of Gemini Control, has just given a weather forecast for the new recovery area.
The weather forecast is good, with winds out of the southwest at 12 knots. Clouds scattered to broken at 2,000 feet. Visibility, 10 miles. And wave height will run 2 to 3 feet. That is the weather forecast for the landing area tomorrow morning.
Both astronauts in excellent condition, the spacecraft in what is called drifting flight. This is Russ Ward, NBC News at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
A reminder before we do anything else that NBC Radio and television coverage of the Gemini splashdown will be starting at 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow, in view, of course, of the earlier end now scheduled for that Gemini Titan V flight. And, in a moment, other things. But first, we have the sound of the Knack. That's Ferranti and Teicher demonstrating that they have the knack by playing the knack. And now, a monitor tip. The average house stores hundreds of gallons of water in the warmer, humid months, in its walls, its floors, and woodwork. Doors that shut easily when the house is centrally heated in winter are apt to stick or not shut at all this time of the year. An application of paste wax to the edges of the doors will cut down on moisture absorption and damp weather sticking. While we're on the subject of water, on our open line in San Diego is Wilson Hall of NBC News, who is the pool network correspondent covering a very important project which will explore life down in the depths of the sea. It's called Sea Lab 2, and there are hopes that astronaut Scott Carpenter will be talking to his fellow astronauts while the space twins, Cooper and Conrad, will be in space to receive his messages. Wilson.
Yes, Brad.
What was Sea Lab 1, first of all? Let's get that one straight.
Oh, well, Sea Lab 1 was an experiment last year off Bermuda, last summer off Bermuda, Brad. It lasted 11 days, and four men went down and stayed in the Sea Lab and swam out from it. Very important, they don't just stay in there, they swim out from it. That was at 192 feet, and Sea Lab 1 proved to the Navy and the other civilians working on it that man can efficiently explore underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have Sea Lab 2, and this, of course, is a different program, and Sea Lab 2 is to, now that we know from 1 that man can efficiently swim out from a habitat and explore, Sea Lab 2 will see how much useful work they can do, how long a time they can work at great depth.
Well, now, that's the first question that crossed my mind, Wilson, is this business of depths. Now, pressure is rather heavy at 192 feet, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
Isn't pressure rather heavy at 192 feet?
Oh, yes. Well, now, in Sea Lab 2, by the way, the men, instead of staying down 11 days, as they did in 1, they're going to stay down 45 days, three teams. Each team will stay down 15, and they'll be at a depth of 210 feet, and the pressure, yes, indeed, the pressure is about six times what it is here. On, well, at sea level. And they will be actually going out from C-Lab, swimming out from C-Lab, working an hour or two at a time at depths of 210 feet, working on exploration, upon salvage work, things like that, to see how well man can work in this depth that man has never worked at before.
Is this part of the overall idea, perhaps, for example, of reclaiming minerals and various foodstuffs from the sea? Is that wrapped up in this?
Very much part of it. They're doing 44 different experiments, and economically will be of great help to people later, for, as you say, for offshore mining, for growing food, but also the practical thing of salvage. And, of course, they will be going through many medical tests to see how well these men do stand up at those great depths at this length of time. Breathing, of course, different mixture of breathing mixture.
Yeah, they've been doing some, Wilson, they've been doing some very strange things with gas mixtures, haven't they, for this deep breathing and deep diving.
Very much. So the breathing mixture on this one, Brad, by the way, is about 80% helium. And an interesting thing when you mentioned your lead-in that Carpenter is going to talk from 210 feet below this to the astronauts 200 miles above it. His voice will probably come out, for all of you who listen to it, sounding like Alvin the Chipmunk. And the reason it does, of course, is helium is so much lighter than air. His vocal cords vibrate much faster. He comes out sounding like Alvin the Chipmunk.
Yeah, completely different vibration rate from when you're breathing that stuff they talk
about. Oh, yes. I think it's something like 4,000 instead of key of C, which is...
That ought to be a very funny conversation.
Yeah. Well, actually, they have an unscrambler, Brad, which brings him, instead of sounding like Alvin the Chipmunk, sort of down to Donald Duck. But,
Wilson, what about the area of personal danger? How does the assignment, let's say, of an astronaut in space compare with that of, what's the word, aquanaut below the sea?
Aquanaut, yes. Well, it's a very hazardous deal. Again, as we've mentioned, living at... at those depths and with the pressure, and any little tiny thing could, of course, send them to the surface. And if it did, why, without decompression, they would immediately die. They don't talk about this much, but they're quite off the record, or at least not officially. It is a hazardous job. They're, after all, working on a hostile atmosphere, a very hostile atmosphere. Even the surface vessel, upon what they depend for communications and so forth, that's in a sea, which sometimes has a swell of 10 or 15 feet, so that's bobbing up and down all the time. There are also some sharks down there. They saw one yesterday. So it's not the kind of place that one would go for a good time. I wouldn't for a good time.
Nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there.
No.
Wilson.
Neither.
Thank you very much for talking to us. Wilson Hall, NBC News. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And that is the story of just what's happening with a group of gentlemen who are called aquanauts. And Wilson Hall, of course, of NBC News is the network pool reporter covering the C-Lab 2 project in San Diego. If you're the type of person who does old skin diving or that sort of thing, maybe there's a real future in this for you. You can become an underwater miner, or you can become an underwater hunter or an underwater farmer, or you can just do any of that that you really want to. I sincerely hope you won't feel personally offended or upset or anything if I don't go along, because, well, I gurgle an awful lot. Art Mooney's version of more. The word automobile, says the National Automobile Dealers Association, comes from the Greek. Auto meaning self, and mobile meaning moving. Of course, the truth is your auto doesn't really move itself. You do. You're in control, at least you're supposed to be. So remember, please, it's important that your auto stay in your control. And that means, most of all, keeping your speed under control. Monitor News on the Hour's coming up. I'm Brad Crandall.
Coverage of Gemini Splashdown now scheduled for 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow, 1 hour earlier than previously announced. Follow it on NBC Radio and Television. War is a far too familiar word, a word that stirs up emotions. But there are bad wars and good wars. Take the war against hunger. Now a worldwide battle by men of goodwill and compassion. Individual Americans can fight this battle through care to show person-to-person concern. You can send a gift of food or of tools to help people increase food production or earn their living to buy their own food. Aid is delivered in the name of the donor from a $1 package of milk to make 400 glasses to a $2 set of seeds to grow half a ton of vegetables, or a $20 kit of farm hand tools, or equipment to help a whole village at $100 or more. The battle of hunger is everyone's war. Enlist today. Fight hunger with dollars to care. New York 10016. Lunch with Mimi Benzel weekdays on The Conversation Station, WNBC, AM and FM New York. News on the Hour next at 10 o'clock.
This is NBC News. Ships and men rush to new splashdown area.
NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by the Retail Clerks International Association, dedicated exclusively to the welfare of retail store employees. Here's Charles Murphy.